birthday of the fall season. It's now fall. And pretty soon we're going to be walking on the leaves, right? We like to walk in the leaves. I love to hear the rustle of that. But today and for the next few Sundays, I'm going to ask you to do something even more exciting than walking in the leaves. Can you guess what it's going to be? Yeah, we're going to walk on the water. All right. For those of you who might be new today, for the next few weeks, we're starting this special series around a book that's called... wait a minute. What am I doing here? I got a little carried away. Oh, on this one, I forgot to put the book up there. It's the book by John Ortberg that is called If You Want to Walk on Water, You Have to Get Out of the Boat. And so we're having these studies about this. And according to Ortberg, that wonderful walk on water that Peter did long ago was an invitation for all of us who, like Peter, want to respond in faith and experience the power and the presence of God in our lives. And so he suggests that we all need to have that invitation for us to walk on the water. And what we mean by that, it's not actually physically walking on the water. It's really doing something with God's help that you could never do on your own power. Now to realize that, it's doing something with God's help that you just know you couldn't do on your own power. We're all spiritual water walkers by birth. By the birth of our baptism, when we were baptized, we became water walkers, doing things that sometimes society thinks of foolish, defying the powers of evil, and we do that because we are spiritual water walkers. Last week, we had the story of how we as a church stepped out in faith to do that whole entryway and make this building accessible. And as we had that wonderful celebration and burned the mortgage to say, this is all paid for, we did it. But you know what? That's only just a foretaste of the glory yet to come for this church and for us as individuals. When you saw those pictures of that play that we did 2 weeks ago, you know, as I was some of those rehearsals, it looked like people aren't going to remember their lines. We're not going to remember those songs, but it was great. You know, it was just, but that's only a foretaste of what is yet to come as we respond to the call of Jesus on our lives. So let's listen one more time to this story. And you had it acted out so well, but let me tell it to you again. As we remember that it was after the feeding of the 5,000, and that Jesus immediately told the disciples to get into the boat while he dismissed the crowds. After he dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain alone to pray. But when evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far out from land, for the wind was against them. And very early in the morning, Jesus came walking toward them on the sea. But when they saw Jesus walking on the sea, they were terrified and they cried out in fear, "It's a ghost!" Immediately Jesus said to them, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." Then Peter said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So Jesus said, what did Jesus say? Come. So Peter got out of the boat and started walking on the water toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong winds, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus caught hold of his hand and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Now let's think about that for just a moment. As we think about this story, we think of Peter very easily as a failure, don't we? I mean, there he tried something, but then he began to sink and he cried out, "Lord, save me." Now Peter is a fisherman. And he's on the sea all the time. And I just bet, more than anything, I bet he could swim. But, you know, even good swimmers, when the sea is very turbulent like that, and there's wind and there's a sea, even good swimmers can drown, can they not? You know, and he was really scared, and he cried out, "Lord, save me," in front of all his friends. Why? How embarrassing. It was foolish. We think of Jesus, I mean, we think of Peter as a failure. But let's rewind this story a minute. Rewind it past that "help me" part, and even past the exhilarating walking on the water part. And let's get Peter back in the boat with the other disciples. So here he is with the other disciples. When they all see Jesus walking on the water, they are all scared. Oh, you guys did a great job being scared. And they're all screaming out, "It's a ghost." All of them, including Peter, but all the rest of them heard Jesus say, "Take heart, it is I, do not be afraid." They all heard that, didn't they? Then Peter speaks up. He says, "If it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, what'd he say? "Come." Now, did they all hear the "come"?
Yeah.
Now, did Jesus say, "Come, Peter"? He just said, "Come." Did he say, "Come, Peter, you stay, and the rest of you stay there"?
No.
Did he say, "Come, you brave Peter, and the rest of you nimby pambies, you stay in the boat"? Did he say that?
No.
He just said, "Come." So who could have come to him? They all could have just scrambled out of that boat and started walking towards him, couldn't they? They all could. They all heard the command. But it was only Peter who was brave enough to get out of the boat. Only Peter then who felt the exhilaration of really actually doing it. So when you think about it, who was the failure? Who failed to respond to the opportunity that was given to them? Who failed to do what Jesus asked? Who was it?
Everybody but Peter.
It was all those that stayed in the boat. They were the failures. Now, John Ortberg, in his book, has a name for people like those disciples who stayed in the boat and just let somebody else take the risk. You know what he calls those people? He calls them boat potatoes. You know, boat potato, that's closely aligned to a couch potato. You know what a couch potato is? The one likes to sit on the couch and with the remote control just kind of sit there and not do anything. Well, a boat potato is a person that doesn't want to get involved, doesn't want to have any commitment, doesn't want to get out of the boat. They would trade the challenge for the comfort of the boat. They would trade the risk for the safety of the boat. They're the boat potatoes. They want to stay where it's nice and safe. Now, there are lots of reasons people become boat potatoes. I don't know. Maybe the first one is comparison. After all, these disciples in the boat, I mean, it was Peter who spoke up. It's Peter who's always out there doing something exciting. It's Peter who's strong and he's the leader. So they say, well, let Peter do it. We'll see if Peter can do it. You know, he's better than we are. He's been around. He's the leader. So we'll let Peter do it. How many times do we say, oh, just let someone else do it? Oh, I'm in a position of asking people a lot of times, you know, if they would do this or that for the church. How many times do you think they say, let someone else do it? Sandy's always asking for Sunday school teachers, right? Has anybody ever said to you, Sandy, let someone else do it? Yeah, all the time, you know. Oh, I can't, you know, somebody else would be better than that, than I would. No, somebody else would be better than that, than me. You know, let someone else do it. We're always comparing ourselves to someone else. But, you know, when somebody says that, I think, well, if I ask Lisa to do something and she says, well, let Sandy do it, I think, well, you know, Lisa, maybe Sandy could do it, but, you know, that wouldn't help you grow. So, you know, it's like when we're always letting somebody else do it, we might compare. But That's not what we want to do. We want to be what? Water walkers. We want to be the one that gets out of the boat ourselves. And we try and we do that. So our choice is to be a water walker or a boat potato. What do you want to be? What's the best, do you think? We want to be the water walker. Well, now there's some other reasons. Maybe another reason is comfort. You know, it's more comfortable in the boat than it is out walking on the water. And sometimes we spend a lot of money, a lot of resources in our lives to make ourselves comfortable. We like to be comfortable. There's nothing wrong with being comfortable. But think about how much money it takes to make us comfortable. And people will say, oh, well, I can't give to church right now, or I can't give to that good cause because, you know, I gotta keep my own boat afloat. You know, I gotta pay my own expenses. I gotta do this. It takes a lot to keep us afloat. Well, how many TVs and how many computers and how many snowmobiles and how many jet skis does it take to keep us afloat? We have a lot. How many cell phones do we need? I don't know. I saw somebody the other day had 3 cell phones. It's like, wait a minute here. Well, you know, we spend a lot on that. In the video, those of you that watched the video this morning, there's a rubber raft, kind of like this rubber raft, and they have it rigged up with a TV on it and lots of pillows and a umbrella, and the guy's sitting there on the rubber raft with his remote control, and he's just living the life of ease. But when you look at that rubber raft with all that TV and all those pillows and all those other things on it, you realize it's kind of unstable. I wouldn't want to go very far in that boat. And what we also realize is sometimes we invest so much of our effort and our money and our resources into making us comfortable that we are only one wave away from capsizing because we owe so much on our Visa bill and our MasterCard bill and our American Express because we want so much to be comfortable. So comfort is not all that it's cracked up to be. And really, what we need to do is to get out of that boat and be a water walker. All right. Another reason, though, that sometimes people stay in that boat and become a boat potato is just simply fear of failure. You know, they don't want to fail. They know that if they step out of that boat, they're probably going to sink. And so they're afraid to fail. But we got to get over that business of being afraid to fail. Because failure is a step on the way to success. There's Jonas Salk. Back when I was a kid, a dreaded disease was polio. And it would paralyze people. It was horrible. And we needed a vaccine. Well, he tried 200 times to develop a vaccine for polio. And he failed 200 times. But he didn't say, oh, I failed 200 times. You know what he said? He said, I found 200 ways not to make a polio vaccine. Well, he said that because that was similar to what Thomas Edison said about the light bulb. Time after time after time, Thomas Edison tried to make a light bulb, and he failed until he finally did. And he said this. He said, I've had a lot of success with failure. You know, you have to fail sometimes in order to be able to succeed. And I like the attitude of Sir Edmund Hillary, who climbed Mount Everest. It had never been climbed before, this huge mountain, never been climbed. And he tried several times. And one time on his, after he came back from an attempt that had failed, he shook his fist at that mountain and he said, I'm going to defeat you yet. He said, you're as big as you're going to get, but I'm still growing. And that's true. And in 1953, he became the first person to climb Mount Everest. You know, that's the way it is. There is none of us who walked without falling. You know, when the little baby gets up, you know, to start to walk, what are they going to do? They're going to take a couple steps and then they're going to fall. And that's just the way it is. And so we're not going to walk on water without doing a little sinking. But you know, every time we sink, you know who's going to be there to grab us? Christ is going to be there. So our choice, again, is to stay in that boat or to step out of the boat and be a water walker. Right. So that's, we got to get over the fear of failure. Because actually, we may think it's safer in the boat. But do you know what happens as you stay in the boat all the time? You don't answer the challenge and you don't grow. And you know what happens when you don't grow? You stagnate. And actually, it just sort of, you rot away. And so what happens is boat potatoes rot at sea. So it's not safer to stay in the boat. We need to get out of the boat and grow. We need to grow and walk. So we're going to be water walkers. Now, John Ortberg suggests that there's a story that Jesus told, a parable that he calls a wake-up call for boat potatoes. So in case any of you were thinking about being boat potatoes and thinking about going to sleep right now, I want this wake-up call to come to you because you hear this story. It says, "For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another he gave 2 talents, and to another he gave 1 talent, to each according to his ability. Then he went away, and the one who received the 5 talents immediately went and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had 2 talents went and made 2 more talents. But the one who had received 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, and said, 'Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You have been faithful in a small amount. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Then the one who had 2 talents came forward saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into your master's joy.' Then the one who had received 1 talent also came forward saying, 'Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you had not scattered seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours.' But his master said, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and I gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take this talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For all those who have, more will be given, and they who have, they will have abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into outer darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" Ooh, is that a wake-up call? I mean, here's this poor guy that only had 1 talent. And first we might think, well, that's not quite fair. He only had 1 talent. What can you do with 1 talent? But keep in mind, a talent was 15 years' wages, which is about, $500,000. $500,000? $500,000. Now, are there any of you that would turn down $500,000 just because somebody else got $1 million and somebody else got $2.5 million? $500,000 is a lot, isn't it? You could do a lot, couldn't you, Cody? With $500,000, I could tell you'd like $500,000, wouldn't you? All right. So you'd do something with that $500,000. Now, granted, the instructions were not very clear. He didn't say go trade with them. He just gave it to them. But then nobody asked, and the other two seemed to know what they were supposed to do with them. And the other thing is that we look at this story and we think, boy, that's really harsh treatment. Throw him to the outer darkness where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. I mean, it's not that he did anything bad. He didn't do anything bad. He just did nothing. It's not that he did anything bad. He just did nothing. He didn't go squander it or do anything bad with it. there's another gospel that was written in the second century called the Gospel of the Nazarene. It was not accepted as authentic, but in that there's a story, and it says that he went off and he spent his money on harlots and flute players. I'm not what's so bad about what's a flute player, but, you know, he spent his money. So it seemed like, well, then he deserved the punishment if he wasted the money. But it's not that he wasted the money. He just did nothing with it. And there's a tragedy with an unopened gift. It's interesting because in the book, John Ortberg talks about his grandmother. And his grandmother, when she was a girl, wanted a set of china, a very special, wonderful set of china. And so at every birthday and Christmas and any special occasion, she would get a piece of china. And it was very special one. It's very expensive, so you couldn't buy the whole set of china at the same time. So people just bought her little pieces at a time. And so she would take the piece, and then she would wrap it up carefully and put it in a box with the other pieces. And pretty soon, she had the whole set of china. But she wanted to save it for something really special, you know, because it was expensive, beautiful china. So she had to save it for a special occasion. However, it stayed in the box so long that everybody forgot about it. And when she died, it was never used. And then her husband was going through her things, and it was up in the attic, and he found this box of dishes. So he called his daughter-in-law, who was John Ortberg's mother, and said, "Now, I was going through some of Florence's things up in the attic, and I found this box of old dishes, and I was going to throw them away, but they're blue, and since blue's your favorite color, I thought, if you want to come over and get them, you can have them, but otherwise, if you don't want them, I'll just give them to Salvation Army." So she came over expecting to see some old, dirty old blue, yucky dishes, and she found these incredible, hand-painted, gorgeous, they had gold in them. I don't know. I just picked out some pretty set on Google.com. I don't know that it was here. Somebody at the first service told me what that was, what the name of this particular one was, and they happened to have that china. And I said, "Did you use it?" And they said, "No, but I think I will after this story," because here it was. She had this whole set, and nobody had ever used it. Now, the grandmother was afraid that some tragedy would happen. You know, something would, they would get broken or something. But there was a tragedy that happened. The tragedy was they were never used. They were never enjoyed. They never accomplished the purpose for which they were created, until John Ortberg's mother got them and she used them. So, you know, that's the way it is. But God gives each of us some talents. God gives some of you one talent, some of you another talent. And if we don't use them, it's like those dishes that are always there in the box and nobody ever uses them, and they go to waste. Now, we might be like the grandmother and say, "Well, it needs to be a special time." You know, people will say, "Well, I can't sing in the choir now because I have some other things to do." Or, "I'll be active in the church when the kids grow up." Or, "I'll do this when I get a better job. Then I can have more time and I can do this." But you know what? If we keep waiting for the perfect time, it will never happen. Peter could have said to Jesus, "Now I'll come out and walk to you when the waves calm down, when it's nice and easy." No, it was windy and he came out there. So we got to realize that the time may never be quite right. That it just, we can't wait for that perfect time, for conditions to be perfect. Because they never will be if we don't use what we have now. Now, we may look and we say, "Oh, well, so-and-so got more talents than I do. I don't have any talents." If you're saying you don't have any talents, you're wrong, because God doesn't make junk. God didn't make a mistake and make you without any talents. If you think you don't have talents, then probably what you're doing is looking at somebody else and being too involved in what all Lisa's talents are, and I'm not looking at my own talents. We need to look at our own talents, because you know what? God will not hold us accountable for somebody else's talents. God holds us accountable for our own talents. God didn't say to the five talent person, "Why didn't you use the one talent?" No. God held the five-talent person accountable for the five talents. So God will not ask, what did you do with what you didn't have? No, that's not what God will ask. God will ask, what did you do with what you did have? So look at what you have and begin using it and get out of that boat. Which one do you want to be? Do you want to be a boat potato or a water walker? Water walkers, that's what we need. Because you see, Christianity is not a spectator sport. You can't just come to church and watch a preacher preach and the choir sing and just sit back and not do anything. It's not a spectator sport. You have to live it every single day. It's important. Ortberg asked some important questions for us to think about, and whether we were in the small groups or not, I want you to think about it. How much am I growing these days? You know, you kids grow and learn every day. You're learning something new every day. But as we as adults, are we still growing? Are we still learning? If we're not, it's like we're dead. So we got to keep growing and learning. We need to grow in other ways besides our waistline. I mean, you know, our waistline can grow, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about spiritually. I'm talking about mentally. I'm talking about in our skills. We need to be growing every day. And we need to be taking risks that require a power greater than our own. How long has it been since you've done something that you said, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I need God's help to do this. If you're not doing that every day, then you need to look around about what you need to do, because we need to depend on God. If we don't depend on God, we're missing out on an opportunity to grow. And then he asked us one other thing. You know, when we die, we don't know exactly what will happen, but sometimes people say, well, when you die, your life flashes in front of you. Just suppose that you had a time to sit down with God and look over your life. You know, like that instant replay that they do of the ball games after it's all been there. And you look at it and you look at different parts of your life. Will there be things that you'll say, oh, I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd done that. I wish I'd done that. Well, we can't go back, but we have today, every one of us. And he asked us to think about, what could I do today to minimize my regret factor for what I'm doing today and what I'm going to do tomorrow? What can we do to minimize that regret factor? Well, I suggest that it's a choice that we have every day about a lot of things, whether we're going to be a boat potato, take it easy, or whether we're going to step out and answer Christ's call to come. Which one will you be? Which one? I know what it is. We're going to be water walkers, right? Amen. Well, I have a song, and I'm going to have the Contemporary Chorus get up here. They haven't practiced this because I wrote it after they practiced. But we have that song, Wade in the Water, children. Wade in the Water. Well, I wrote new words. I didn't want us to wade in the water. I want us to walk on the water. All right. So let's, I need some help, though, from this walk on the water, children. Walk. Christ is a calling on the water. All right.